Flyers Daily with Jason Martinez.
All right, here we go. Brand new Flyers Daily for Monday, the 29th of April, 2024. It's actually our final episode of the calendar month of April, and we'll be on to our first month without Flyers hockey. We'll have May, June, July. That's, what, 3 months? August. And we'll pick it up in September in the preseason. Already miserable. I'm already miserable without the season going on. The playoffs are going on. Flyers aren't in it, but I am already miserable. It's official. Mark this day down. I am miserable without hockey. All right, Flyers Daily presented by Ticketmaster. Make more memories live. Our exit day player interview series is going to continue this week. Coming up Wednesday, we are going to feature Joel Farabee, who's been the subject of a lot of conversations. So we'll hear from Joel Farabee in Wednesday's episode. This episode, Bill Meltzer will join us in just a moment. And after Bill in this episode, we are going to feature our first of five interviews with five small business owners who were rewarded with the Flyers Hometown Assist, which is presented by Wells Fargo. The winners were selected to receive $100,000. That's a good chunk of change in marketing assets to promote their small businesses as their prize. And we're going to talk to five different companies and small business owners through the next five episodes and feature them, which is awesome because this is a Philadelphia Flyers podcast. The key word being Philadelphia. We need to support our local small businesses and small business owners. And we're going to do exactly that by featuring a variety of different companies on this podcast. And today, we will start out featuring a company called WellFed, which I think is a really interesting concept and a really interesting place. Because a lot of us like to eat. We'd like to eat healthier, but we don't know how to do it. That's where they come in. We'll get to that coming up after Bill. But in the meantime, let's start off. Joining us from PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, NHL.com, and HockeyBuzz.com for his Monday visit, weekly visit as we call it. It is Bill Meltzer. Bill, how you doing?
Doing well, Jason. How about yourself?
Good. I'm starting to enjoy the playoffs. It hasn't been, Bill, as wild as it normally is. You know, chaos and multi-overtime game after game and, you know, upset specials. There's been a lot of chalk so far in these playoffs.
There has, you know, but I don't know. I think we could still see some seven-game series here and some drama before the first round is over because the first round is usually, to me, the most intriguing. Anything can happen in off of the craziest round. It almost skips rounds sometimes. You know, I think the conference finals is great, and the first round is great. Stanley Cup finals are really a mixed bag. And the second round seems to be a little bit more according to how you figure on paper it's going to go.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll still see how it turns out. You know, I think that there's still a lot of intrigue that has to be worked out and, you know, like for example, the Dallas series. I think they could easily be 2-2 after the next game.
Yeah. So, yeah, that one, that's a good one. And, you know, the one that a lot of us are keeping an eye on for obvious reasons because of the stature of the two franchises. Yeah. You look at Boston and Toronto. Bill, and I remember, I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago at this time of year when you and I were talking, and we were talking about Toronto's got to do something. They got to make some kind of change to get a guy out of there to change the dynamic.
Yeah.
They still haven't done it yet. They've changed general managers. But if they do, and I fully expect them to get bounced in this first round, they've got to make some kind of move with one of their forwards. And to me, there's only one forward that can be. Yeah. They just extended Nylander. Matthews is going nowhere. Tavares is going nowhere. And we saw that ugly scene on the bench with Mitch Marner. Yeah. To me, that's got to be the guy, but what's the value commensurate with the contract?
Well, that's just it, too. And I think
$11 million, Bill. Holy. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. You know, there's the I think that it puts them in a spot where, you know, as we've talked about many times, and you just alluded to again, they tied so much cap up in four players.
Yeah.
Right? They neglected other areas of need that have come back repeatedly to hurt them in the playoffs. And, you know, just about any player or line can be not shut down, but at least contained enough in the playoffs. that one line alone, or you know, just a power play alone, and I know the power play is struggling, but you know, one element, one line, one star that can be contained in the playoffs to, you know, enough where that one line won't beat you. And the same, you know, even if you have a deep top end of forwards, you need, you know, some of these guys a little lower in the lineup have maybe stepped up even a little bit in the series. But, you know, there's always just been missing pieces there, whether it's been the goaltending, or they've lacked a real top end defenseman, or, you know, the some of the guys.
Blue guys, off, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And having, you know, a guy like Hyman was a great role player for them, and now was a, you know, I don't think necessarily be a 50 goal scorer elsewhere, but he brings the right things to Edmonton. They miss guys that bring those other elements that they need. So I see them getting bounced in the first round and trying to figure out how to make these changes in a, you know. When guys have these no movement clauses, they can name the terms of where they're going to go. Yeah. You know, if they're going to go at all. So I mean I really do. Yeah, I mean it pretty much has to be Marner and all that stuff going down on the bench. And listen, you know, I think something. Yeah, it happens. There's frustration on the bench, and, you know, a guy slammed the door and whatever. So on the bench door, maybe they say something before they go off. There's whatever. It happens on every team at some point. But A, it's Toronto. B, they're losing in a series and it's the playoffs. Everything gets magnified. But you know, I think it's past the point where they can just keep running out the same group and hope for a different result, because it's clearly not going to happen.
And look, they do have a different general manager. Brad Tree Living's in there now. Kyle Dubas is in Pittsburgh. So that's another dynamic to the equation. Marner's got 1 year left after this with a full no-move clause. His AAV is $10.903 million. Not bad scratch. But only then he's going to obviously be a UFA. I mean, it Bill, I've talked about it. You've talked about it. Danny Briere talked about it on his exit day press conference. That, you know, going into the free agent market is probably not where this team is right now. But if you can, I've called it big game hunting. We're not going to go big game hunting in free agency, but I might go big game hunting in hockey trades. Is this one where you pick up the phone and, I mean, you're going to have to part to get him. And there's, I mean, obviously you'd have to talk about some kind of extension along with it.
Yes.
I mean, the first parts of this conversation are going to be on your blue line. It's going to be Cam York, I would imagine, is the first name that they're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, one of those first round picks this year or next, plus more. Is this a conversation you entertain when you look at the struggles of Marner that he's had in the playoffs, what he's going to be due on his next contract, what he's going to have to, you know, make to get a raise? And how do you, is this something that you pursue from a hockey trade standpoint? Because you do lack high end talent. And there's one thing about Mitch Marner, he's high end talent.
No.
This is a polarizing conversation, by the way.
I think too that it's not like he's a guy who's 30 years old either. So
26.
Yeah. So he's still in that kind of prime range where mm-hmm. he'll be, you know, still be a productive player for a number of years to come. I think you have to consider it.
Yeah.
For sure. Now I think that there's other pieces to it as well, though. You're going to need more roster reshaping than that, and I understand that you'd be giving up real value too. I mean, if I had to make a prediction, I would say that he's not coming here. You know, if I had to say, predict it, but I certainly think that you have to do your due diligence, because players of that talent level are not too frequently available. You know, and you know, and who knows? Maybe we'll be talking about this next week, and it'll be some improbable comeback. I don't anticipate it, but weirder things have happened.
Yeah.
But you know, but I think you have to at least, yeah, you have to at least look at the possibility. There's a chance of bringing in a player of that kind of ability level. I think you have to look at, okay, what would be involved in potentially, you know, getting something like that done. You know, then you have to make some decisions around that too. Certainly the extension would be a part of it as well. I mean, it certainly makes for some, you know, some good early silly season stuff as you know, would you bring him in? And then there's the Konechny piece of it too, right? Yes, I've got to play with, but, you know, at that kind of scratch, or you're talking about, you know, extending Konechny in the $9 to $10 million range, that's a lot of cap in two players.
That's $20 million right there, easily. And then if an extension for Marner, you're looking at $22 million, and now you're looking at, you know, roughly 22% of your cap.
Yeah.
It's a huge number. I mean, he's a player who scored over 90 points three times in his career, had 85 this past year, and, you know, two of those years where he didn't score over 90, it was because he only played 55 games in the shortened season and 59 the next, and he had 67 points in those. I mean, he is a prolific offensive player, and I mean, maybe I think he needs a change of scenery, but he's going to be an interesting name come this offseason. But again, like you said, no move clause changes the tenor of the conversation to a lot of markets for sure. So we'll keep an eye on that. Bill, before we get to the Flyers and kind of looking at the inventory here, first of all, congratulations to Ian LaPerriere and the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Lappy sent me a pair of tickets. I finally went up and saw a game in person there. I called games there before, but I never went as a fan to watch a Phantoms game. Great experience. I love the PPL Center. It's an awesome building. I love the town. We stayed like a block away. Me and my wife went up and stayed overnight, and we saw one cracker of a hockey game. Phantoms trail 1-0, get it tied. Go down 3-1, they tied at 3. They go down 4-3, they tie it with 3 minutes left, and they win it 3 minutes into overtime, and they move on. What'd you think of the game?
Oh, well, especially the third period. That was just fantastic.
You know?
I mean, listen, it was an interesting game in a lot of ways because the Phantoms played a really good game one, period to period. You know, it was a little up and down in the second game, in part because of all the penalties. You know, Phantoms were kind of lucky to get out of that first period down just 1-0, and they take five penalties and they only give one goal. They come back to tie it, then they gave up a power play goal after that. Really, the goal that I thought was going to be the killer was the 3-1 goal late in the second period.
Me too.
And early in the third, Jason, like they. I mean, one of the things with Wilkes-Barre Scranton is they didn't give up many leads. They were a tight-checking team with very good goaltending. And early in that third period, you know, the Phantoms had to work very hard to try to get any time and space, and they weren't finding much. And then mid-period, they get the power play, the 5-on-3, and bang, bang, they score, and all of a sudden you have a tied game. And then after that, you know, it was like they weren't going to be denied. You know, even when the Penguins went back ahead again, you kind of felt that another goal was coming for the Phantoms, you know, and then they ended it pretty quickly in overtime. So, congratulations to that team. You know, congratulations to Cal Peterson.
I thought he was good, Bill. Yeah, he played pretty well.
Yeah. He stepped up when, you know, as they needed him to. And the other thing I put out there, too, it's a shame Tanner Lozinski missed so much time this season with injuries because, in my opinion, I thought he was the Phantoms' most consistent player when he was healthy, both sides of the puck.
Yep.
You know, playing in all game situations. You know, Laz was, obviously, as any player would be, disappointed after spending most of last year in the NHL that, you know, he was cut in camp. Not even one of the final cuts, went down with the right attitude, took a leadership role in the team, and played a really strong brand of two-way hockey. You know, it's a shame he missed a chunk of the season in the middle, which might have taken away any chance he might have had at a recall to the NHL at some point this season. But down the stretch, I think Laz and Adam Brooks were the Phantoms' two most consistent players, and both guys – set up in some big moments in this playoff series. But I think in that third period, the two goals that he scored, you know, kind of showed his value to the team.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have a real tough series coming up against Hershey. You know, the team that had the best record in the American League, almost set an American League record for points in a season. As hard as it was this season to score against Wilkes-Barre Scranton, even harder against Hershey. But the Phantoms played him tough. Phantoms did of some wins against them. So, yeah, we'll see what can happen.
I thought Brink, you see the difference. And Brink, every time he was on the ice, was a threat to make something happen. I thought he played really well in the game. Just creatively, it looked like he was just a guy that was thinking the game at a slightly different level, which probably is the case. But yeah, congrats to Lappy, and great time up there in the Lehigh Valley. Got my first eyes on Kolesov as well, Billy. In warmups, he is a little smaller than Fedotov, that's for sure. But he moves like a hovercraft on his knees. So effortless, like the way
and he made two regular season starts late in the season. And I thought he looked good in both games. One of them, he literally had no puck support. It was a 2-0 loss. The other one, he won. But it wasn't even judged by the stats. I don't think there was any who's going to actually stop in those games. He's on the smaller side of average size, and also his posture in net makes him look small sometimes.
Yeah, they have to get his chest up a little bit.
Yeah, I think so too. But his lateral movement is crazy, and his athleticism is off the charts. That's the first thing that jumps out. That is absolutely as advertised. He's a fantastic athlete.
Yeah, he looked like setup wise, he looked a lot like Saros to me. Yeah. Very wide below. But we'll get a better look at him next year. But he's going to equate into our next part of this. And I thought this would be a good time, Bill, for us to kind of like take a little inventory. And where I want to start. Because when you talk about the inventory of this Flyers team, you have to consider a couple things that happened this year that were of pretty substantial magnitude. Obviously, you look at the trading of Cutter Gauthier and the deal that lands him in Anaheim. Flyers get Jamie Drysdale in return. And I got this email from Ken. He said, longtime Flyer fan here. I'm very concerned about the loss of Cutter Gauthier and its impact on the rebuild. Some sports writers consider him to have been one of the three players at the heart of the new nucleus, the others being Michkov and Hart. Now, I can accept the loss of Hart with the rise of Arison and other goalie prospects, but I'm scared that Drysdale won't become a star, top pair D-man, while Gauthier scores 40-plus goals multiple times over a long career. I'd like to hear a brutally honest take on how badly this loss has set the rebuild back. And when I read his email, I was like, it's a really good topic of conversation, and it'll lead us into this part one of this inventory we take. But when you assess this season and you assess not only the hockey that happened on the ice, they played 82 meaningful games, all of that. Part of that assessment is the loss of Carter Hart, and we know all the reasons why, and also the loss of Gauthier. And there are question marks around Drysdale. I'm really eager to see him with a year of Brad Shawism on him next year, but that's not happening. He's got a lot to learn about playing the NHL game, just hasn't played a lot of games, and he carries the Can He Stay Healthy moniker. So when you look at, Gauthier, good riddance. He was just schmucked the way he acted, and I think he was entitled and all of that, but I still do realize that they did lose something from a hockey standpoint.
No, for sure. They're not, they're not swimming in top end forward prospects, goal scoring ones particularly.
Yep.
Having watched Gauthier having played in, some pretty high leverage kind of situations, right? Collegiately, but also internationally for Team USA. He's absolutely a pure goal scorer, and he has a big, heavy shot. All those things. I think I don't have a doubt he's going to score goals in the NHL. I don't.
Me neither.
Now, will he be a 30-goal guy or a 40-goal guy? Right? I don't know. Is he a better I don't think in Anaheim, unless they trade somebody, I don't think he's going to play center. I think he's going to be a winger for them.
And that's part of the value equation, no doubt about it.
And that's part of it too, right? Because part of it was – would he be a center or would he be a winger? And he's always going to be more of a shooter than a setup guy.
Yeah,
but you can have a scoring center. That's okay. That's okay. I think he's improved in terms of his off puck play and some of the 200-foot stuff. Still has to get better. Still, I think he's strictly going to be averaging in those areas. So. If he's going to be a 25-goal guy, even 30, he can work around it. If he's going to be a 40 goal guy, well, those don't, you know, those don't come around every day. So I think he's a very good prospect. The Flyers really did not have another choice. They traded him at the right time because even though the Flyers could have, had they wanted to, forced the issue for two more calendar years.
Who's that benefit?
You're dealing, there's no benefit. You're dealing with a diminishing return every year. Every year you don't sign him, it becomes obvious that he's not signing. So why would anybody offer you anything for him? You know, and you know, listen, like the way he acted around the Frozen Four, just the level of cockiness you don't usually see in hockey. There's going to be a lot of tears on the other side, and I'm going to get a couple goals tonight. And they went out and got nothing, right?
They got shut out.
I don't know. Stuff like
there's
stuff
a
like
lot of things he's done that's rubbed me really the wrong way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the way he handled a lot of the surrounding with the Flyers, and I still don't feel like there's any real clarity as to why he suddenly went from, I was born to be a Flyer, to I won't sign here for any reason, you know, a year later.
Yeah.
But
there's some NHL players that aren't enjoying the way he's carrying himself.
No.
Either.
No, and you could see in the room too, in the Flyers room.
Yeah.
It was like, well, if he doesn't want a beer, we don't want him.
Yeah,
you know. It was almost like, not to draw comparisons to talent or level of play or whatever, but it was almost like when Mark Friedman left Philly and he went to the Penguins. He was a marked man every time they played because obviously he rubbed a lot of guys in that room the wrong way. It's going to be the same thing. At higher stakes, it's other conferences, but you know, can they hold them off the board? But also, you know, what's going on between, and sometimes even after the whistles will be pretty interesting.
I remember when that happened with Mark Friedman, and he's in the lineup every time the Flyers play the Penguins, and there's just all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah,
and I texted a teammate of his, and I just said, "All right. I've seen enough. I got to know," like somebody that I have a really good relationship with. I'm not going to say who it was.
Yeah.
And they said he was one of the most despised guys, a combination of insecurity and arrogance like you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And guys just – look, you're not going to like everybody. It happens. And sometimes some guys are just not good team players. And they let Mark know that when he was a member of the opposition, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's an understatement. Yeah,
I mean, it was pretty obvious. I was like, so obvious that I texted a teammate of his dad, like, all right, you got to tell me what the hell's going on here. I don't know about anything here. But it is a loss. And but to address, you know, Ken's email, I think that, it may be a step backwards, but we can't fully – suss it out yet because we don't know what a developing D is going to be. If Drysdale is a guy that can stay healthy and he turns into a top-pairing right-side guy, if Gauthier scores 40 goals a year and is a really good player, it could end up being a wash or you could end up winning the deal because you have a right-side top-pairing D. I look at Drysdale more as maybe a second-pairing D because of the size limitation. But anyway.
No. Assessed in the long term, it's almost like revisiting Cole Caulfield and York, right? Judge that over the long term, and there's the positional part of it too. Drysdale, my number one concern is really the health, right? Because he was never really healthy this year, apparently. You know, the Flyers knew that when he came to Philly, and he'd even kind of dance around a little bit. Even when he came here, he was still not really, not really healthy, not fully healthy. Some of that core muscle stuff, which scares me.
Yeah.
And also knowing the history of core muscle injuries, where it kind of takes a half a season to get back,
break down the scar tissue and everything that comes with it. Yep.
It's quite often, even the guy's 100, so-called 100% for camp, it takes a while until he's,
Look at Claude Giroux's 56-point season.
That's right.
Core surgery.
That was a whole year. And I remember Jimmy Benn went through the same thing in Dallas. Like, well, what's wrong with Ben? Well, he was just coming back from that same kind of procedure, you know, and it was three quarters of a season with him until he really had a strong finish. And then the big year after that, the year after that, but you know, the following season. So the health thing concerns me. Absolutely has a ton to learn, but I think he'll learn it. If you're ever expecting Drysdale to be a shutdown defenseman, I think you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to be, I don't think he's ever going to produce points on like an Erik Karlsson kind of a level, for example. Yeah. But do I think he could be consistently, if he's healthy in the lineup, can he consistently be a 40 plus point guy? He wasn't that far from him as a rookie.
Yeah.
Right. He's definitely shown that upside where he can be a pretty darn good offensive defenseman, even in not skating as well as he could, particularly going laterally across the blue line, walking the line. You know, you might not have ever known he was injured sometimes. So I think there were a lot of flashes of pretty high end offensive skill. That little period of time where the power play seemed to be one of those segments where the power play seemed to be working. It seemed like he and Frost in particular had a pretty good little chemistry going for a while.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a ton of potential there. I don't know if ultimately, he'll play long term with Nick Seeler or who the right partner on the left side with him is. But I think that there is a situation you could put him in to succeed, and I ultimately think as long as he's healthy, he should be fine. So will he ever be a top pairing? I don't know, but could he fit in what the Flyers want and need him to do? I certainly think that's in the realm of possibility. And you also have to remember again that you were never gonna, for whatever reason, you were just never gonna have Gauthier.
Yeah, so that's the thing you got to wrap your head around.
Yeah, so
I think the perfect partner for him, Bill, is Travis Sanheim. Eventually, I think you move Sanheim back to the left side. You make him a partner. That way, you have some length there with Drysdale and Sanheim, and that's the second pair. And then, but you got to replace Sanheim with a legitimate top pairing right shot.
Yeah,
right D, and if you can do that. Like, I'm not saying that's bonk. I'm not going down that road. That's way too early to even heap that kind of responsibility. I have no idea. But if you had, a legit top pair right side guy on the right side of Cam York, who is a 1,000-time better defender than I ever thought he'd be, already, and he's only 24, and I think he's just scratching the surface. And then you have Drysdale and Sanheim on a second pair. And then your third pair, eventually becomes some combination of Emil Andre and Ronnie Attard or Emil Andre and a veteran right shot. I don't know. Maybe that's where Bonk starts with a guy like Emil Andre on the right side on the third pair. And then to me, this is kind of now the arc of a rebuild from the defensive position standpoint.
No, for sure. Now, of course, The big question mark here is, okay, who is that right shot first pair D, who you're going to bring in? You're
probably not Ristolainen.
Yeah, right.
Not as a top pair guy.
Right, exactly. And got to keep the expectations in check where you're not going to get Drew Doughty in his prime or anything, anything on that super high end, like a right-handed version of Pronger, but a guy who can be part of the mix, give you 20 minutes a night, play a good two-way game and work well together with York, then you have Sanheim, and Drysdale potentially in the second pair. I love Seeler in the third pair.
Yeah, I do too.
So, Seeler, I was surprised how well he played in a second pairing role, but I especially like him on the third pair.
Yeah.
So it gives you a lot of possibilities, whether that's with a guy like Andre, whether it's with Attard, I don't know, but it's always good to have some possibilities of guys that can, that can fit a role and fit pieces together. There's definitely needs in the blue line. There's definitely needs up front. I mean, that's, you know, as we're going through this, assessing where we are in the rebuild.
Yeah.
Still big pieces missing. That first pair right shot D, and that one, they have the one C.
Dominant 1C. Yeah.
1C. So those are, you know, huge things that have to be filled. And then all the, you take care of those things, and then other things can fit around it.
I just figured it out, Bill. Risto, a one, the latest one in this year's draft, the second first-round pick the Flyers have, for Mitch Marner.
Oh, okay.
Who says
that? Right.
I solved all the world's problems in one sentence.
Yes.
But I digress. Let's look at the goaltending position from an inventory standpoint. We mentioned Hart. He's no longer here, no longer part of the equation. Bill, will they tender him? Do they have to qualify an offer to him to retain his rights? And will that even take place?
I don't know because the, you know, these guys are kind of on the shelf.
Yeah, they're suspended, essentially.
You know, and the Flyers did get cap relief for the rest of the season when he was declared ineligible the rest of the season. My guess would be you have to qualify him.
Can he just sign the qualifying offer though?
Well, would still be ineligible to play.
Yeah. I would imagine they won't have to qualify him and they'll just be in oblivion until there's resolution here. I don't know.
He was restricted free agent. He was also eligible for arbitration. I mean, all that's kind of, I don't know about the qualifying, but the arbitration, all that stuff's out of the window, you know, out the window now.
Yeah.
And he's not playing anytime soon. So,
yeah.
You know.
But from the standpoint of the goaltending position, when, yeah, you know, we take a little bit of inventory here, so you lose Hart, and that's a huge loss from a sheer hockey standpoint and a goaltending standpoint. Airson did play a lot of games this year. I thought his ceiling was high. His basement was low, way too low. I think he's got to eliminate a lot of the basement, that he can't go fall down that far from his best game. You got to kind of shrink those two closer to each other. Fedotov is a huge question mark, which, you know, they signed the extension to Fedotov. I know a lot of people freaked out and, you know, going crazy that he's getting paid more, and he had an 881 save percentage this year. He appeared in three games. Like I said last week, if you judge him on his appearances in the NHL this year, you're the fool. Yeah. Because he had no business even playing in those games, let alone in that situation, behind a team that was in tatters at that point. You don't evaluate him on that. But there was a lot of sticker shock with that contract. You have Kolesov, who we've mentioned, Bill. Looks like Zavragin is going to be going perhaps to play in the KHL next year. And we'll see if he gets optioned to Sochi or whether he stays put and how that plays out. But when you look at the goaltending position, I don't know that it's going to bear – the inventory is going to bear big results next year, where you're going to go, we've got what we need. But there's a lot there. They have the second-ranked goalie prospect pool in the NHL, and it's for good reason. And Carson Bjarnason's part of that as well.
Yeah.
I do not want to forget him. But when you look at Airson, Fedotov, who I guess technically is not a prospect, Kolesov, Zavragin, and Bjarnason, there's a lot there. I say with goaltenders, if you hit on 20% of the ones you draft and you hit big, then you're ahead of the curve.
No, for sure. And you know, I'm a believer within reason of every draft, you take a goalie somewhere along the way.
Between the third and fifth round, grab a goalie. If you like one, grab it.
I've given this example before. You know, the late, great comedian Mitch Hedberg used to tell a joke about baked potatoes that sometimes you just put in the conventional oven, right, and you just, you know, because by the time it's done, who knows, right?
Yep.
Same thing with the goalie. Same thing with the goalie. By the time they're developed, you don't really know what you're going to have. You don't know if you're going to need that player, you know, imminently. But it's going to take a while. You go in knowing you're going to probably be dealing with, if he's in North America, 2 years a junior, certainly a year, maybe 2 years in the American League. You're already 4 years out at that point. Right, and probably as much as five. So you really kind of have a sense of, is he even an NHL prospect? And then working up his minutes in the National League. So What do you have? We'll see long term. I mean, the Flyers have had good goaltending pools before. Remember in the late 90s, they used a bunch of first-round picks.
Ouellette.
Goalies on Bouch, on Max, you know, Maxime Ouellette. He wasn't a first-round pick, but he was the Flyers' first pick. Jean-Marc Pelletier was a second-round pick, but he was the Flyers' first pick in the draft. And, you know, obviously Bouch turned out pretty good. But other than Bouch, the other goalie turned out the best was a sixth-round pick. It was Niedermacher.
Yep.
And you just don't know. So to have that depth and have it a little bit staggered as to when players are joining your organization at the professional level, it's good. And in terms of physical tools and whatever, this is a really good bunch. I mean, you're trying to, like Zavragin, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. But he was 18 years old and playing in a professional league. So the league one level down from the KHL, and he was putting up like a 140 goals against average, a 930 save percentage, you know, against pros as a teenager. You know, it's going to take time to develop and whatever, right? That all that goes with that. But just in terms of off to a good start, off of, you know, so you don't have all your eggs in one basket. I think that that's what you want to do. You want to diversify that as much as possible. As many positions as possible. From the goaltending end of things, long term, I think the Flyers will be in good shape.
The thing is when they drafted Zavragin last year in the third round, we saw him take Bjarnason, and then he took a goalie in the next with their next pick.
Yeah,
we're going, holy cow! Like, what is going on here?
Yeah,
and I remember they just thought that the evaluation they had on Zavragin was so high. They just, even though they took a goalie with the pick before, and they've got holes galore, they couldn't deny the opportunity. And I think we got a glimpse of that this year. And Ken Hudakov does a great job over scouting the goaltenders in the Russian area. And he may be just an absolute gem. But, again, a lot to be determined there for the Flyers. And look, the goaltending, like, next year may not rear to be a huge strength of this team. I don't know. I think it's – I mean, it is the biggest question mark that I'm going to put on my question marks list when we eventually get to that in August, for sure. Yeah. I just don't know what it's going to be. I love the way that Harrison finished the year with those three games. I thought that took a lot of stones and a lot of, you know, mental fortitude to overcome what he did to put in those three performances in the Ranger game, the 1-0 win over the Devils, and then the final game against the Washington Capitals in some high-pressure situations. So I love that he finished like that, but there's some questions to be answered next year for sure. Bill, we're going to have to push the forwards and the inventory into next week because we've gone on long enough. But here's the deal. It's going to be an interesting conversation when we talk about the inventory of the forwards because there is a couple of things we mentioned. You know, that lacking of the true number one center. How do we evaluate Couturier and where he fits going forward? How do we look at Noah Cates as a winger or a center? And is there redundancy issues to be dealt with when it comes to maybe Cates, Poehling, Lawton? Be some interesting conversation, and we'll talk about that next week with Bill. Read his work at PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, NHL.com, and HockeyBuzz.com, and Bill will join us again coming up next Monday. There he is, Bill Meltzer, joining us on this episode of Flyers Daily, and he'll be back next week, of course, as well. A little inventory of the Philadelphia Flyers. Let's get to our first small business owner who was rewarded with the Flyers Hometown Assist presented by Wells Fargo. I had a conversation with the proprietors of WellFed, and here's that conversation. It's another edition, Flyers offseason edition of Flyers Daily, and we are featuring small businesses that have been rewarded with the Flyers Hometown Assist program presented by Wells Fargo. Winners have been selected and receive $100,000 in marketing assets to promote their small businesses as their prize. And I think we've got a great story to talk about in this episode because WellFed started right when the pandemic started. Now, they're not Nostradamus. They did not know it was coming. But the services they provided then and continue to provide now are great to keep people healthy and eat well. Join us is Adriana and Lorenza from WellFed. And let me start with you, Adriana. You know, how did the idea, where did the germ or the seeds get planted to start this?
So the idea started for this business because essentially our family just in general was always very like health and wellness oriented at the time that we started the business. I had just moved back from Las Vegas, so I was living in Vegas for a few years. It's on the West Coast. I feel like they're a little bit ahead of the trend, particularly when it comes to health. And so meal prep in Vegas was huge. Everybody that was working in the industries out there used it as a tool because, you know, the hours are different. They might be working overnight. So they all used meal prep. So when I moved back home, there weren't really a lot of meal prep companies in the area. And Lorenzo had just finished up going to culinary school. And like I said, we were all healthy oriented. So we ate really well. And we had a lot of recipes that we had been, you know, cooking at home. And so we turned it into essentially a meal prep company.
And like, to me, this serves so many different types of people. It's the career oriented, very busy person that still wants to eat healthy. And, you know, sometimes, like the enemy of diet is planning.
Absolutely.
You get hungry and you just eat anything. But this service provides that planning to keep you eating healthy. Lorenzo, let me ask you, because, you know, the misconception is that healthy food can't taste as good. But that's baloney. Well, I don't know if baloney fits, but pardon the pun. But like healthy food can taste really good if prepared properly. And if you don't know how to do that, this is where you guys can step in.
Yeah, so I think that's when I actually went to culinary school for baking and pastry. Like our family, we are sweet tooths at home. And I was in culinary school and my favorite chef at the time, he was like a 7XL or something. And I was just like very mind blown. I was like, there has to be a way to make this stuff taste good and not diminish your health or like diminish your goals or like keep you on track. So that's kind of when I started playing with healthy baked goods. And then that's kind of like where kind of started, but as well as growing up in a family, we are an Italian family and food is our culture and everything revolved around the kitchen or the dining room table. And we are not going to eat food that doesn't, not going to stay on track. It's not going to be something that's going to be part of our lifestyle. So being able to have the skills to take healthy food and make it taste like it just came out of your mom's kitchen is kind of where my skill set came in.
Adriana, when you look at it, people can go to your website, you can go there, and what can they do? Can they set up programs and deliveries and kind of schedule this around the intricacies of everybody's individual lives?
Yeah, so we actually have two different options of how you can order with us. The first is kind of exactly what you mentioned before. It's, what is the saying? It's like, fail to plan to fail. Yep. And so the whole idea of meal prep is providing that convenience. So to add to that convenience factor, we have a subscription service, which works exactly like, you know, a Netflix subscription. It's weekly. You would go on, you choose your package of 5 or 10 meals, and then we basically deliver the meals every week to your door until you cancel. It's non-binding. It pretty much is just planning to set it and forget it is essentially that. Or you can go on and you can order a la carte. So like maybe there's some weeks where you're going on vacation and you get home on Monday and you didn't have time to grocery shop on Sunday. That's like where we come in. Just, you know, we can send meals to your door and you're set for the week. Or if you only need, you know, maybe 2 meals that week, we don't have a minimum. So we do a la carte and then we do our subscription packages.
Lorenzo, one of the things about eating healthy is you go, okay, there's a few core things that I can eat and be healthy. But a week into it, I'm like, okay, grilled chicken breast and whatever vegetable. Like, it's getting boring. And variety, I think, is a key to keep you on task when it comes to eating healthy. And I think that would be fun going to the website like every Sunday and going, okay, this week I'm going to have this, and this. And it's, and you can provide that variety because that'll keep – I think that'll incentivize people to continue the structure of eating healthy.
That's definitely how, like I said, we kind of started. And like, for instance, this week on our menu, we have a healthy play of the Chinese takeout beef and broccoli. Mm. So everything's made, every sauce that we make is from scratch. We use like coconut aminos instead of soy sauce, no high fructose corn syrup and anything. So that's kind of like where the play comes. We keep it fun. We keep it creative. And that's kind of where I get to have more fun and more. Is it always like we are gluten and dairy free? So sometimes that's a little bit of a struggle making meals healthy in that way. But we find ways to keep it excited. And every week you have something new to look forward to. And also we do have some like fan favorites like our chicken fingers that a lot of people who don't get to eat all the time, you still get to have that joy of eating chicken fingers and french fries. We have a couple other things that, like, my favorite meal is our Italian pulled pork. It's like a play on, like, a Tony Luke's pulled pork sandwich with broccoli rabe and roasted, slow roasted roast pork with a cherry pepper relish. And it's like stuff that it's not just your traditional chicken and broccoli.
Yeah, so you can have that variety. And you can eat healthy things that you traditionally don't seem healthy, but they can be cooked in healthier ways. And you know, it's like tricking your brain a little bit. The website is bewellfed.net. You can go there and look at all the different programs and, you know, different ways that you can, you know, be a kinder person to your body. What you put in it is, I'm over 50 now, and like I've found that when I eat clean or I eat healthy, I sleep better, I feel better. It's a different type of energy that you get from it. And it's really important. And I think people should go to your website and look at that. And you guys started, you know, I was talking to Adriana, you guys started right before the pandemic hit. Adriana said your first delivery was, I think, February 28th of 2020. 2 weeks later, things shut down. And that really kind of launched you guys, because I think you guys, you know, two young go-getters, look at it and really passionate about what you do. You said, all right, let's use this to launch the company and really provide a service to people at this time that not many people could provide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's when it kind of hit. It was a lot of people were scared of the grocery stores. Like, you weren't going out and you weren't doing things. So it worked as like a blessing as a curse for us, because when we first started, Adriana was in marketing and I was still managing restaurants. So I would do the day shift of prepping everything and go manage the restaurants at night. And she would do the shift of marketing and then go finish the meal prep during the day. So we switched. So as soon as the COVID kind of happened, we were like, wait, we can actually focus just on the goal and the dream at hand. So it was definitely a blessing for us that it finally freed up a lot of time, because we were juggling a full-time and a part-time thing at once.
Yeah, but we got lucky because we both got furloughed. So we were like, essentially, then we had time to build the business. And then we kind of made it our goal, like, okay, we're not going back. And I don't think we didn't go back.
With that decision. They definitely called us and they were like, oh, we're ready for you. And we had the luxury of looking at each other and be like, we might not.
Yeah, we didn't have to go back at that point. And that, I think that was also like very rewarding and motivating in that time, because we were like, okay, we're on to something. It was kind of just like one of those things, like she said, a blessing where everything kind of fell into place, really. Better than we anticipated.
I'm sure there's a ton of uncertain times throughout that process.
Yes.
But now that you're on the other side, it makes it even better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it feels so long ago, and yet in the scheme of business, it's not. Like, you know, it feels like we've been doing this a long time, but we're 4 years in, and that's really actually not that, you know, not that long for a business. But I do remember, I mean, we were all quarantined in my mom's house. There was like six of us. We had to buy extra refrigerators to keep in her garage, because like once the orders started picking up, I think we had like, you know, everyone has like that garage fridge at home that we kind of like stole from my mom. But then we had to buy another one once orders picked up. And that was like our little manufacturing plant for the first 6 or 7 months.
Until she kicked us out.
Yeah, until she basically was like, we basically did a good job on her kitchen oven that was not a commercial oven.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she was gonna be like, okay, listen.
I think we had like 300 or like something, 300 or 400 meals. And that's when she was like, get out.
Yeah. Like, it's fun to have somebody cook in there and it smells good and the whole thing. But it gets to a point where you're like, geez, can you guys stop cooking now?
Yeah. Yeah. It was basically a takeover.
Yeah, that's awesome. How did you guys get involved with the Flyers Hometown Assist and this program brought to you by Wells Fargo? And, you know, you're going to be able to use $100,000 in marketing assets to get the word out for people to live better and eat healthier and eat clean.
Yeah, I think it's such a, like, for a small business, it's something that, like, you can't even fathom having your name in, like, the stadium, on the board. Like, that's something that's, like, so out of reach for small businesses, where like you see the big businesses names up there, and like it's such a, I mean, it's a goal, but it's something that like, you know, it's a journey to get there. So having the opportunity to apply for the hometown assist and realize that we are contenders in that, it was an amazing thing. And it's also a really cool way to see your business kind of come full circle, that the hard work kind of pays off, and especially being part of a community and the community being able to give back to a small business like us and share that space with us. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, the Flyers, obviously with professional athletes, nutrition is key and recovery mm-hmm. is key. To yeah. me, this shoe just fits very well. So, pardon the pun again, go to the website, bewellfed.net. Adriana and Lorenzo, thanks so much for doing this. Best of luck. I can't wait for next season to start and see you guys at the arena and as the another season gets underway. Enjoy the summer. I love what you guys are doing. I think it's a great service and a great thing for people that it seems too daunting sometimes to be healthy, and this is a great assistance program for that. Thanks for doing this, and be well.
Thank you so much, Jason. Have a good summer, too.
Thanks to everybody from Well Fed, and I look to go there and get well fed and healthily eated. Is that even a word? Healthy eating. Well fed. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Flyers Exit Day interviews continue coming up on Wednesday with Joel Farabee, and we will talk to you next time on a brand new episode of Flyers Daily.